Hi, this is Rick Dominicus, and you are listening to the Handsome Timidity Express.
Hello, dear reader. Hello, dear listener, and welcome back to episode 23 of the Handsome Timidity Express, which is a proud part of the Dan and Travis Show, an awesome podcast about awesome things you can find on awesome iTunes and your awesome podcast apps on your fancy phones. We're also a proud part of the Chronic Rift, which is a network of podcasts looking to put the culture in pop culture. Very proud to report that two episodes of the HTD Express have appeared in the top 10 of the Chronic Rift. So thank you very much, all the Chronic Rift listeners and fellow podcasters. Really, really appreciate the support. So glad you liked the show. So glad everybody liked and shared, retweeted, downloaded, and spread the word about last week's really informative Screenwriting 101 episode with the great M. Dal Walton III. Just some really timeless advice in there for screenwriters everywhere. So if you haven't heard it yet, feel free to go scroll on down, hit the index, and check it out. All right, when I came up with the idea of doing the Handsome Timidity Express, I think I've mentioned this before, there was like a good 5-10 people I thought of like immediately that I wanted to have on the show, and my guest today is one of those people. And the reason why I waited till now to ask him to be on the show is because it's December, there's a chill in the air, the holiday carols are singing to either your delight or your ad nauseum, and he's an old friend of mine who knows a whole lot about something I don't know about, which is the world of knitting. And making scarves and sweaters and making all kinds of things that help keep you warm this time of year. Welcome to the Handsome Timidity Express, Sammy Cat.
Hi. I'm so glad to be here, Timmy. This is awesome. I mean, I remember us kind of vaguely talking about this probably a little bit more than a year ago, yeah. I think. And just kind of being, you know, I can't tell you how many people I deal with who are like, oh, we should do a podcast. And then I'm like, okay, girl, well, you call me on your Skype and let's go. And so far, you've been kind of the one. So,
rock and roll.
Big ups to you for that.
The just a little background. Sammy and I have gotten to know each other at the world famous Doctor Who convention, Gallifrey One, in February. If you're looking for tickets, it's kind of sold out.
Sorry about it.
so anyway. And it's we're probably a big reason for that, Sammy. I don't know. But we have just had some of the most eclectic and wonderful and interesting conversations all over. But and one of the things that's fascinating is if you walk in the lobby of the Marriott, where the convention takes place, you'll find Sammy knitting away nonstop. Just for hours on end. Even when you take a sip from your adult beverage, Sammy, I don't think you stop knitting away. And it's just such a remarkable thing. You sum up the phrase "follow your bliss" because you are certainly following this I know nothing about. Tell me about the world of knitting.
Gosh, I don't know about the whole world of it. I mean, I just make a few things. I can tell you like my entree into the world of knitting. I mean,
yeah.
I can tell you. I know about knitting.
Tell me everything, because I know nothing. Whatever you're going to tell me is brand new knowledge.
Okay. Let's see. Knitting is actually one of the most ancient textile arts. You can actually find hieroglyphs with people using like sticks to weave fabric. So when you knit, you're tapping into like a really ancient tradition.
Okay. See, now I watch like Ancient Aliens and like fucking all those History Channel shows about like America, unearthed and ancient discoveries.
California. Never mind. Got
yeah,
it.
But the I didn't know that about hieroglyphs. I didn't know that this was an ancient tradition. Please carry on. See, this is fascinating already.
Yes. Then I actually have to confess up and tell you like that information kind of comes like secondhand. I want to say maybe Uni Jang on this TV show that I watched called Knitting Daily might have said something about that.
Okay.
Or maybe with my sister, like around the time that I learned to knit in December of 2005, about 9 years ago, actually, on Thursday.
This very week?
Thursday, yes. Correct.
That's a total coincidence, actually, that happened, so that we scheduled you on that week, and I'm very psyched that 9 years of knitting. So you are taking up this ancient tradition that goes way back when.
Oh, yes. And it's actually something I had wanted to do for quite some time. I remember late 2003, early 2004, this roommate of mine and I went to a yarn store, uptown, kind of, which for people without cars, it's kind of like a hike to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And we just happened to be in there and we saw a little sign up that said, you know, knitting lessons. With a price and the time or whatever. And a schedule. And so I questioned the woman behind the counter about it. She's like, she took one look at me and my little gay friend, and she was like, I don't think you guys would really be comfortable with this class. I don't know if it's really for you. You know, and at the time, because I was like kind of like on the spot with this woman, she didn't really like click with me what she said until I was out of the store, and I was sick, Timmy. I was like, I was like, she just said we can't go to her knitting class because we're faggots.
Because if you want to stop Sammy Cat from doing something, tell him not to do it. It's not going to work that way at all.
Yes. And like at the time, I just kind of let it go because I had a lot of other stuff going on. I was in school full time. I was working full time. I actually had two part time like jobs and school. Like it was a busy time for me. And sure. I was remodeling my house. So I just kind of let go of it. And then, I kind of went about my life. And then Hurricane Katrina happened in August of 2005, like the end of August. And I ended up, after some initial like displacement, I ended up living with my sister in Norfolk, Virginia. And, like, she knitted. Well, in the best efforts of our sibling attempts to, like, teach each other something or another, it didn't really work out too well, and she tried to show me how to knit. I couldn't make sense of it. Like, the way that I was looking at her hands wasn't corresponding to how I felt. Like, I could move my hands, and I was like, I don't understand. Like, steps that she was taking weren't lining up for me with what I was seeing her do. So I was really just fundamentally not understanding it. Of course, that period of time was really tough for me. Like, I was going through all this, like, PTSD. I was drinking a lot, like, on the regular, which is not something I had been doing for quite some time. And I was in school at that time, too. But I was like, I mean, dude, like, all that... like depression stuff where it's like I remember like being studying for a class and reading like, I don't know, 10 pages or 20 pages of text and then not being able to retain a thing on it and pick the book back up and start reading those 20 pages all over again and have no recollection of the notes that I wrote in the margin.
Wow.
Like I recognize my handwriting, but even having this train of thought about this information seems really odd to me. So I was really at a very bad time, spiritually, emotionally, psychologically. And so the school semester ends on, let's say, the 4th or maybe the 6th of December. And I'm all sad, all tossed up there. And I'm like, my best friend Sandy's birthday is December the 18th. I'm like, I can't be with my friend. And I'm like out here amongst all these strangers. And it was just tough. And these kids that I played Scrabble with, who just for the most part worked at the Virginian Pilot, which was like the local paper, they were having a craft party on December the 18th. And the principle was kind of simple. Like, if you do a craft, bring your stuff, and if you want to learn a craft, bring the supplies for that craft. And, like, let's say, for example... I wanted to learn knitting, but you wanted to learn macrame, and I knew how to macrame. We'd trade the skill off. Do you see?
Sure. Yeah, that's great.
And since I had no other like reasonable skill, I just bought wine. It worked.
Well, we could have craft night any night next time you're in LA, Sammy. That's perfect. That would that would work fine here in the Express. So anyway, bring a bottle of wine.
So I bring a bottle of wine. I remember this woman kind of stepping me through the process. And the way that I actually learned it was this other girl who had just picked it up was sitting directly across from me. We're kind of sitting like cross-legged on the floor, like facing each other. And what she did was she just kind of turned her wrist over so I could look at her work from the same perspective that I would have on my work. And I just mirrored what she did. I was like, oh, snap, girl, I got this. Watch.
So was it was almost better to be closer to that skill set? She was just a little bit ahead of you as a beginner. So it was almost, you know what I mean? Like, it sounds like it helped to take some baby steps.
I think her ability to explain it to me was by that.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense, though. Yeah, sometimes it's not so much what's said, but how it's translated. We talk about that a lot when it on this podcast. So now you start getting it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, honestly, Timmy, I swear, I made plain what we call garter stitch, which is just knit in one direction and knit back the other direction. Just scarves for, gosh, years.
Mm-hmm.
Years. And, you know, it's one of those things where, like, once you kind of, like, once you give all the people that you know, like, knitwear for Christmas, well, that's the end of, like, your gift giving.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe some other people, like, actively look out to, like, I don't know, give to kids with cancer or something. You know, God forbid, I just caught, like, how insensitive that might sound. But even, you know, even if you were getting rid of a lot of your knitwear that way, it's still kind of an expensive hobby to have. Like, even cheap yarn can be expensive when you buy enough of it. And if you don't watch out, you end up looking like an episode of Hoarders promptly. Like, promptly. So, like, I'm kind of looking like my house kind of looks like Hoarders right now, actually.
Yeah.
That's why we're doing it. That's why we're not doing a video call.
Exactly. It takes too much space on the website.
Hello. But actually, I don't know that I would have, gosh, Timmy, you know, like, it's kind of all of a piece. Because, so I learned to knit on December the 18th of 05,
mm-hmm.
and then I'm going to say, in February, beginning March 06, I had I had a pilonidal cyst that developed into a staph infection.
Oh, gosh.
And I had to have like two surgeries. I was in the hospital for like 6 days. Like when I got to the hospital, I was having like all these flu-like symptoms. Like we had just had, an outbreak of meningitis. So everybody was like on the hot button about that. And it was really a bad situation. And if you don't know what a pilonidal cyst is, just Wikipedia it. It's not pretty.
I believe you.
Believe me, it's not pretty. P-I-L-O-N-I-D-A-L, for those of you playing along at home. Pilonidal. I'll wait while you pull up the Wikipedia entry. Yes, it's as bad as it sounds. So I had this surgery, which required me to be, gosh, I'm going to say 6 to 8 weeks
mm-hmm.
to heal up. Like there was no... Like there was no sewing the wound back up and you just get on with your life.
Sure.
Like it had to go inside out. So this meant somebody had to like give me wound care on my backside three times a day, sometimes more. And I remember being in this hospital after like being in there for like a week and just all high on this morphine drip they've got me on. No, I even had the push button for the morphine. I was like, Christmas. And I remember this nurse explaining this aftercare to me and me thinking, girl, there is no way in your life that you can even see what you're doing to like keep packing this thing with gauze umpteen times a day. But I'm so high, I can't tell this woman this. And so they're about to release me. I know they're going to be releasing me within like the next few hours. And my brain is starting to finally come out of this haze of pain and morphine. And I'm like, oh, Sam, you need to figure out where you're going to stay because, like, my apartment is upstairs and it's a walk-up and I live alone and there's no mirrors. And I mean, there's, like, I don't know, a face mirror, but not nothing. I'm like, what am I going to do, bitch? Like, absolutely sick. And so I had them unhook me from the IV and I went downstairs and I was standing in front of the hospital smoking a cigarette with that glamorous gown around my back, just wondering how the hell I got here. And all of a sudden, I heard somebody call my name. I looked up, and it was my aunt and my grandmother. You know my grandmother, Geese, that you've been seeing on the internet so much?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen any of my videos with her? Isn't she fun?
Very fun.
She's a good time. She said, put that on the internet. So, and then I'm like, oh, my gosh, a miracle. So, I explain to my grandmother the situation. We get up, and we go back up to my room. The doctors and nurses explained to my grandmother, like, what kind of aftercare needs to happen. And, like, she's like, all right, well, I wouldn't be too much of a grandma if I didn't take him home with me, so let's go.
Wow, that's pretty great.
Oh, my gosh, dude. Like, she absolutely saved my life. And so there was, gosh, like, 6 weeks ago where really the only thing I could do was knit.
Mm.
And, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I just, you know, thanked I don't know, God of the universe, the spaghetti monster, whoever it is this week, for giving me this skill so I would have something to do with myself, because I honestly don't know what I would have done with my hands for that period of time.
But it also sounds like it probably helped keep you kind of sane during that.
Absolutely. 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 It totally saved my life. Like, I would have been crazed.
Some people, though, might have gone through an experience like that and, like, almost as soon as you were, better, put the knitting away because it would be a reminder of it. But it sounds like instead that didn't happen to you.
No, not at all. Because of the fact that I was doing such basic work as far as just making scarves,
mm-hmm.
I never made the same scarf twice. It would always be a different combination of colors, textures, different fibers. So it was never, like, even though ideally it might have been the same scarf twice in that it was so wide and so long,
mm-hmm.
it never looked like the same thing twice. And I always felt like that I was transmuting this awful nightmare that I was living through into beauty. So I was able to look at it like that.
That's a fucking great quote. That is a great goddamn quote. And I'm already thrilled with this interview that you said that, because that's so much of what we're trying to do. And I'm not trying to sound highfalutin or grand about it, but
well, why did I not?
Okay. You're right. Fine. Sammy said why I can sound grand. So I'm going to sound grand. No, but that's what art and creativity is taking something ugly and making something beautiful. That's what we're doing. That's what screenwriters are doing. You're taking a blank page in a boring format and turning it into a beautiful movie. That's what you were doing when you were stuck on your back convalescing with this horrible health issue, recovering from it, and you had nothing to do with your hands, and you had to turn that ugly period of time into something beautiful. That's friggin' awesome. Let's stay on this track for a second. So you didn't want to make the same thing twice. So,
exactly.
I'm prefacing this too much by saying I know nothing about it. Like, when you were designing these scarves, and you're saying you're doing basic stuff, but were you finding designs like in a magazine or a book, or were you you're coming up with your own stuff?
It was my own stuff.
Mm-hmm. What was your inspiration? Like, how do you, and maybe there's not really an answer to this, because, you know, sometimes it's hard to say, well, how do you write music? How do you write a story? But, like, what was your sense of aesthetic? How would you design a scarf?
Like I said, I mean, basically, I wasn't changing anything as far as the width or that. These were plain, like, straight scarves. It wasn't like, oh, I was, you know, reducing or adding stitches to try to make it be wider in places or to add ruffles or whatever. I mean, so my concern would be, like I said, the colors and the textures. Like, how is this going to look together?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So let's say I would have a flat, let's say rust colored yarn. That's probably typical for what you would think of when you think of yarn. And then I put alongside that an electric blue yarn that's made of nylon that has a nice soft quality to it. That kind of looks like eyelashes. And I would make the scarf two stranded. So whereas I could have made one scarf with the rust or another scarf with the blue, I combined both of them to get an entirely new fabric that wasn't there before.
Right. So where did you get your sense of aesthetics? You know what I mean? Like, where were you? Was a lot of this just coming from, like, in other words, are you combining your knitting with a previous interest and study of art? Or was this just, oh my God, I love this new quote unquote hobby / passion so much. I just want to see what I could do with it.
It was definitely more the latter.
Okay.
It was definitely more the latter, because I respect that. I think certainly when I look back on a lot of my older stuff, I can totally see where I was just making stuff for me and hoping other people would like it.
Mm-hmm.
Probably within, gosh, I mean, I said that I made those scarves for years. I'm going to say actually within about 2.5, maybe 3 years, I started to make little hats, like little ski caps, you know what I'm saying? And I made them in the same way as I made the scarves, in that I was just really making, you know, a flat piece of fabric that I would later seam up.
Mm-hmm.
And the first 5 stitches, I would use two or maybe even 3 strands of yarn And then, but by the time I got to the fifth stitch, I would let it go. And then I would knit to the end with the remaining yarns and come back. So that way I'd have a band. Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I guess that sort of aesthetic kind of came from seeing like other people's like winter hats, their ski caps and stuff. And of course, I live in New Orleans and ain't nobody ever going skiing here. Like it's really not ever that hot. It's not ever that cold to be wearing these kind of hats. And in a lot of ways, I really felt like that I was making like these fantasy pieces for like, I don't know, displaced former club kids suffering from PTSD and Tylenol, fist. Mm-hmm. So there's that. But there was definitely piece that I mean, I definitely remember some hats that I made. Ooh, girl, who this is for. And then I would be at an art market, for example, and somebody would pick it up and they would have the right coloring or the right style, like the right personal style. And they'd put it on. I'd be like, oh, bitch, that's for you.
Right.
No, other people have picked up my work. I'd be like, oh, no, girl, that one's not for you. I have something that's for you. But what you got on right now is not you.
Right. So it's not just about like, so you're not creating like one style or one genre. You're actually trying to cover a pretty wide gambit to cast a wide net for an audience here.
Exactly. And, you know, but like I actually recently had to like kind of rein some of it in to some degree and start kind of like, I hate to say obeying that invisible hand of the market, but I don't even like phrasing it like this, but I've definitely started making more like quote unquote masculine kind of hats.
Mm-hmm.
Just to kind of appeal to that. To that side of the demographic. Cause I used to get that a lot at these art markets. People would be like, "Do you have any men's hats?" I'm like, "Well, what kind of a man are we talking about? I'm a man. I'm wearing this hat."
Yeah.
What you trying to say, bitch? Like my last time I checked that, this hat don't have no place for your boobs to go. So I think it's pretty much a unisex piece.
Right.
Don't come to me with your heteronormativity. I have a revolutionary ass. Look out.
So one of the things that comes up a lot with screenwriters, a lot of creatives is, you know, is my script any good? What if nobody likes it? What if it's a failure or whatever? It's a big fear in the world of the arts. Now, well, let me ask, like during that, whether that convalescent period in the beginning or maybe even later on, like did you ever make a scarf or a hat where you're like, oh my God, nobody in the world is ever going to see that. Oh God, did I screw up with that?
Not so much nobody in the world is ever going to see it because again, we go back to, you know, me ending up on an episode of Hoarders. Mm-hmm. So somebody's got to look at it. Somebody's got to see it. You have to take it to other people to get the feedback. Like I understood that. Do you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
I'm thinking of a hat right now that I made in this really, it was really a lovely yarn to the touch. But it was like yellow, and I think I used it was this really like puffy like yellow yarn. And when you put yellow on me, I look really sallow, and it makes me look really weird. And I was like, that was one of those things. Like I don't know who this is for. I was like, but it's not gonna stay up in my house because then I'm gonna be in a bitch wearing it, and I'm not wearing it, so that's a waste of space. So I brought it to the art market. And I was like, ooh, baby, I don't know. I remember placing this little thing on one of my little heads and be like, baby, I don't know who you are for, but when they come here, I will know.
Right.
Sometimes you have to talk to your artwork like this. I don't know if screenwriters do that.
Well, we get pigeonholed a lot. Even now, like, you know, as I'm shopping for management and agents, I need to present myself as a drama writer. If I walk in the office and it's drama, comedy, and horror, they're going to say to me, we don't know what to do with you. We don't know how to sell you. Because they are right. Casting such a specific net to the networks and other production companies. So, but with you though, it sounds like even if you go like super wild and outlandish, even if you're just like, you know something, I don't give a fuck. I'm just going to do whatever today. You may find somebody who will see that piece and go, oh my God, where have you been my whole life?
Exactly.
So you have a lot of freedom actually.
Yes. I mean, however, you know, having that much freedom also does impose a certain amount of risk.
Sure.
Because you don't have the stability of a tried and true product every single time, every time you go to the gate.
Now let's go back for a second.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. But I think, I don't know. That's kind of exciting though, right?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely. Like I would really much rather have had this experience of watching this woman pick this hat up and just put it on and me look at her and look at her coloring and look at the way she kind of held herself and the way that her face lit up when she looked at herself in the mirror about it. And I was like, bitch, it's yours. You know?
I love it.
Like I would rather have that experience once a year than a whole bunch of like, I don't know, suburbanite nobodies just mindlessly picking up like another quote unquote masculine, like, black and gray hat, you know?
You're not in the business of making boring stuff, Sammy.
No, child. I create wearable art. Listen.
That's absolutely right. But, well, I just wanted to touch upon real quick, though, just like your timeline of events here. So we have, and it's kind of interesting. You hear this a lot. You hear this a lot from people who are like, well, when did you start doing this creative artistic thing? And they will usually more often than not talk about a trauma. Whether, you know, I actually almost died from an over hyperactive strep throat, believe it or not. And that was right before I had moved out to LA to take my screenwriting career very seriously. You know, sometimes when you have that, an experience of,
it's not forever. Like, tomorrow's not a promise. Get to it. Yeah, absolutely.
That's exactly right. And it's so interesting to hear your story. That's another reminder. I mean, George Lucas was almost killed in a car accident. He was only all about cars before he's like, well, I'm going to go back to remaking Flash Gordon, and now we have Star Wars and stuff. And it's true on every level. I think a lot of people respond to certain traumas and tragedies, however you want to call it. I'm not saying like one's worse than another, but when you have this sort of thing that kind of rocks your world in a really bad way and you could respond to it, as you beautifully said, turning something ugly into something beautiful, it's such an interesting thing. So you go through that experience. And like you said, you basically made knitted presents for all your friends and family. What made you decide, hey, wait a second, I have something here that I could do as a business?
Like I said, I don't know how else to say this. Honestly, it became like the act of knitting itself became such second nature to me that I couldn't imagine not knitting.
Right.
You know, right, like somebody awesome. Told me that I was not going to breathe oxygen tomorrow.
I
was not going to knit.
I'm going to find a picture from Galley because I know I have one from the hotel. We're going to put it up on the page here because it's true, dear reader. When you're in the room with Sammy, it's true.
Well, honestly,
you were knitting, and I love it.
Honestly, Tim, you're really kind of overstating it because this past year was the first time I actually brought anything that I was working on to Galley with me.
I just remember being so impressed, though, by the fact that you were just—you were indefatigable.
Yes.
With the knitting and everything, and like you said, it's really a passion.
It truly is. Well, and what I was working on at that time was also a season 18 Doctor Who scarf that was specifically for Rebecca Rowan. Hi, Rebecca.
Yes.
Who was at Galley? Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Like my goal for Galley was to have it done and finished and presentable to her at the end of the weekend. Which then I'm not being the case because I think she left kind of early on Sunday afternoon. And I'm sure, I don't know if you will recall, maybe you will recall reading about it on the internet, but at about 2 a.m. Sunday night/Monday morning, I was like, praise be. And of course I wasn't able to give it to her right then on the spot, but I completed it in my personal time frame.
Exactly. So it wasn't your fault it wasn't delivered.
Well, yeah.
I'm not blaming you, Rebecca. Don't get mad.
Well, and also, like there came a point in the weekend where I was like, no, you know what, girl? Like, there's a certain amount of, like, finishing you're going to have to do with this. Like, with that particular season scarf design requires a slip stitch border on the edges, and then you have to, like, add tassels, you have to block it. I mean, like it doesn't just come off the needles and pow, it's over with.
Right.
Like there's a bit of finishing left to do with it. But that was fine.
But so this is a business, though, that grew out of the passion. It's not like you started a business and then became passionate about it.
No, but I definitely remember looking at – I definitely remember watching these scarves kind of creating themselves almost in a way. And that is definitely how it feels sometimes. Kind of watching these things coming off the needles. I'm thinking, girl, people will spend money on this. This is beautiful.
So – I want to go back to something you said when you talk about how you initially learned it and your fingers weren't like getting it. It's interesting because I couldn't help but think of like a guitarist trying to learn. You know, yes. And it's hard to, you know, unless you, it's easy to watch a guy going crazy doing a guitar solo, and you don't actually realize until you stop and watch the hand movements just how insanely difficult it is. What it sounds to when you talk about, like you were just talking about, that scarf doesn't just roll off the needles and being there. I mean, how complicated is this passion and hobby of yours that maybe a lot of us don't realize just how hard it really is?
It can be as complicated or as challenging, I guess is a better term, or as you want to make it. When I was just doing those back and forth garter stitch, you know, plain, you know, rectangular scarves, that was relatively easy as far as the making of it would go, because it was something that I could be eyes off, which was my initial goal with knitting, was I wanted something to keep my hands busy so that when I spend, I don't know, XYZ amount of time passively in front of the television set, by the end of that time, I have something to show for it besides burned retinas and a bunch of quotes from A Different World. And although having a lot of knowledge about Julissa and Whitley is definitely a nice thing, it's better to have a scarf in addition to.
Absolutely. Life is better with a scarf. It's true. Yeah. And a lot of this comes from the world of Doctor Who, which, of course, Tom Baker made the scarves famous as the Fourth Doctor and stuff. But so tell us, what exactly is that the majority of the orders you get, or is that just a small part? What are the products that you sell?
Gosh, what are the products that I sell? Let's see, Vanna. What do we have behind curtain number one? Well, like I said, I initially started off, you know, doing scarves, and I've made several Doctor Who inspired scarves. Only one or two of which were what I call screen accurate. Oh, Alex Tucker, don't kill me over this. Oh no, that's not his name. Alex Murphy, don't kill me about this. I mean, I know my stuff may not be as slavishly screen accurate as yours, but damn it, I tried. But like a lot of what I've done have been like Tom Baker inspired kind of scarves.
So, okay, so you make some Doctor Who-inspired scarves on top of a bunch of other products. What's a good place for people to go to check out some of this stuff?
Well, of course, like I was saying before, the winning... Of course, you can reach me on Facebook at facebook.com/ Witting Knitter Warehouse, WEARHAUS, yeah, like I'm Lady Gaga. Or you can hit me up at Witting Knitter Notes, .blogspot.com, and when you get to the front page of that blog, there's a link to my Etsy store as well.
So it doesn't have to just be Doctor Who scarves. I mean, you take pretty much
everything. Now I will say, so far I have not made any how am I trying to say this? Any like fitted garments. Like I haven't made any sweaters, any that. I think at my current skill level with where I'm at with knitting, I think that would be really hard for me to do, especially if it would be for somebody who I didn't have at my disposal that I could personally measure.
Right. No, for sure. Absolutely.
Lately it's been a lot of shawls. Actually. In fact, my previous benefactress, Miss Rebecca Rowan, actually just had me make her a beautiful Downton Abbey inspired stole recently. Beautiful, beautiful. This lovely, lovely eyelet lace.
Have you ever been asked to make something for a show that, like, since you do make sort of, like, inspired stuff from, you know, now you just mentioned Downton. But has anybody contacted you for a show that you don't watch and you have to sort of go out and research that a bit?
No.
Okay.
So far, no. I mean, what I made for Rebecca came with a very specific kind of pattern.
Copy that.
Now, I will tell you, that's something that's changed for me as I've gotten more proficient at knitting, is that when I started to knit, I really wasn't looking for it to be complicated. I wanted it to be something that I didn't have to look at, you know, and my hands could just do it without me really being engaged. Like we call it mindless knitting.
Right.
Whereas now, I'm much more like because I'm making a lot of work that is you know, made of lace or has a very specific kind of an increase or something like this. Like I'm having to pay a lot more of my attention.
Is that a goal of yours? Like, are you trying to get more and more complicated, or are you just sort of like, you know, something? I'm knitting based on whatever my instinct and passions are.
Well, at this point, actually, at this art market that I did this past weekend, my so-called wife and I were talking, and she's basically, you know, my so far maybe not quite so silent business partner. But she had some really good ideas about as far as making like a few like prototypes of pieces, mm-hmm. and like off, like a spring line like that. Be like, oh, okay, well, you know, here's like, you know, four or five things that I can do in you know, XYZ colors and or textures, but this is what's up for the spring.
Right. Interesting.
And rather than just sitting around like mindlessly making, I don't know, just pumping out hat on hat on top of hat, and then go to a market and end up only selling two hats and be like, oh, trick. Like, I still have like 28 hats and one hat.
So you are having, in your own way, having to manage sort of kind of market fluctuations and demands and such, along with the individual passion that is this particular field.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And then when you do these art markets and things, there's also managing not to wallet people when they want to walk all up in your art, up in your booth space and be like, you know what you should make? Yes. That's here, bro. And they come up with some completely ridiculous thing in like black and gold for the Saints. Really, bitch?
Never would have thought.
Wow, that never occurred to me to make something in Saints colors. I'm so glad you came to this market tonight. It must be fate.
God bless them. They're trying to help. I always love it when
You know what? You know what? That actually presupposes people's like good intentions, and I don't think they're trying to help. I just think they're trying to have something to fucking say when they don't know, when they really don't have anything to say.
You know something, Sammy? I can't really argue that. That does happen. That absolutely is right. That absolutely happens. I always, you know,
call me and be like, "Oh, my grandmother used to knit," and actually, one time this woman did come up to me and say this. It's like, "No, you know, my grandmother used to knit." I was like, "Okay," and I keep waiting for her to like, you know, continue the conversation. She's like, "You know, now that I think about it, I don't know why I just told you that. I'm going to stop bothering you while you're working."
That's funny.
My friend Eva and I do a lot of public knitting, and we'll have people like approach us and tell us about some old hag relation there that you used to knit or something like this. And really, they want to tell us some story about themselves.
Mm.
This one woman I remember rolled up on us at the Roosevelt Hotel, in fact, in the CBD. We're at the little coffee shop, knitting our little hearts out. And this woman walked up to us and she's like, "You know, I grew up in Singapore and my aunt taught me how to knit." Okay. You know, like, okay. Like, I don't know. All right, bitch. Like, I don't know where we're supposed to go from here.
It is kind of, I mean, did you ever revisit, you opened the blog with a story about somebody who was like, "I don't think this class would be right for the likes of you," sort of. Mm-hmm. Did you ever see that class again, or ever see that woman again, or ever show up and be like, "Hey, look, here's..."
I never went back in that store again.
Never looked back, eh?
Nope.
Can't blame you on that front either.
Honestly, you know, I'm really not 100% sure that they're even still around, because this would have been like 10 years ago.
It's very hard to do business these days with those attitudes.
Well, and also we had a hurricane, you know? Like,
oh, that's true, too. Well, that's true, too.
Like, I don't know if they got blown away in the big wind. I really have no idea.
But actually,
I only know of two local yarn stores here in town, and neither one of them is in that part of town. Now, this place may still be open, and I just am not aware of it because it's really out of the way for me trying to get there on public transportation. Whereas the other two are, like, one bus ride away.
Sure, but what I do, you know, going back on some of these stories you're telling about meeting some of these ladies at the art fair and stuff and everything, and, you know, this lady at the store and everything, when somebody says knitting, you know, if I were to say, "Oh, I have a friend of mine who knits," they might think, "Oh, what are you doing being friends with this, you know, 80-year-old lady?" But
of course.
It's, you're kind of breaking that.
Optimistic, but also ageist.
Right, but my point is, though, is that you're breaking that stereotype, and the fact is,
fucks with people.
What's that?
It really fucks with people. I never realized how much it fucks with people until I started doing it in public.
Well, what's also interesting is that you learn from somebody who breaks that stereotype. You didn't learn from an 80-year-old lady. You said you learned from another girl in Northern Virginia who's also a similar age. How wrong is that stereotype, and how sort of like widespread is this community that you're a part of?
It's actually very, it's really, really widespread. There's actually any number of, like here in New Orleans, one of those local yarn stores that I was telling you about is actually owned by kind of an older lady. Mm-hmm. And once a week, she'll have like a knitting circle night, like on Wednesdays. And that group tends to skew a bit older.
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, we know, you know, there's nothing wrong with old people knitting. I'm just saying they're not the only ones doing it.
Exactly. Whereas, if you could let me finish.
I will.
I know you're from L.A. and you're like, bitch, we got to go. Come on. Look, breathe.
I thought that was a pause, Sammy.
Exactly. A pause for me to catch my breath. Okay. I was coming back. I mean, listen, this is not HGTV, bitch. We don't need to fill every single second.
My apologies, good sir. Please carry on.
Austin is not going to have us have a double elimination this week.
Yeah.
Listen. So, whereas also on Wednesday night, but it's kind of at a later time, there's a group called Stitchin' Bitch that meets at a local coffee shop, and they skew younger, like they skew more towards my age. And there's even one girl who I want to say she's like a senior in college, like 21, 22.
Mm-hmm.
And at my job at the med school, one particular day, like sometimes I'll bring my knitting to work on, like in like these breaks that we'll have. So I'll be, you know, playing a role as a patient, but I won't necessarily have to be like on until, you know, a time. So I'll kind of sit there and knit just to kind of keep my hands busy. And I had three groups of students that day. And actually, of those three groups of three people, four different girls, actually, all of them were girls. So the hobby is not quite as degendered as I would like.
Mm-hmm.
Four different girls out of these three groups were like, you know, what are you making? And I start to give them like the Reader's Digest version of it. You know, I'm like, well, let me say this in the most simple terms possible. But once I start saying like these key words, they're like, oh girl, I know what you mean. I knit too. It's a swatch. Got it. You know? And so we were able to kind of bond about it a little bit. And it's been interesting to find out like how many different styles, as far as like personal styles go with knitting, as far as like garment creation. Because like I was telling you earlier, like I would make those simple scarves and the simple hats out of my own design, because I would experience what I call pattern anxiety. Like when I would try to read a pattern, I'd be like, I can't, I don't know what it means. By the way, I speak two foreign languages, and then the language of knitting eluded me for a long time. Like actually reading it on the page and not being 100% sure exactly what do these words mean. I would get profoundly anxious. I would feel really like defeated by it.
But why weren't you ultimately defeated? What kept you going to keep? I mean, you were very determined to master this.
Well, I started to write my own patterns. Like I was like, okay, you know what, Sam? Okay, I can kind of make sense out of this. And thank God that we have the internet today. We have YouTube and things like that. And so many easy to access, like online resources at my disposal. Cause if I would have to deal with like having to take two buses to deal with some homophobic old hags uptown girl, guess what? I would have put the needles down a long time ago.
So at Stitchin' Bitch, which is phenomenal. Whoever named that, if you're listening, well done.
It's actually named for a series of books.
It's named for what's that?
I know there's at least two, if not three, books called Stitchin' Bitch, and it's like a contemporary, like knitting, like knitter's book.
Well, again, if the authors of those are listening, well done indeed. See, this is a whole new world has opened up in this episode, Sammy.
And we're not even talking about Lash Hook yet. Listen.
Well, if you could let me finish. Ah, just kidding with you. But at Stitchin' Bitch, you're not finding the same designs twice. You know what I mean? Like, is everybody... That's one of the things that's interesting about this. This is a very sort of individual expression is a big part of this art form here.
Yes. And even when you do find somebody, for example, that Down Abbey stole... Mm-hmm. When I began to work on it, and I was kind of chatting around with these ladies from Stitchin' Bitch, one of the other ladies at the table just happened to have bought the same, like, because it came from a Downton Abbey Knits magazine or something. She's like, oh, I made that a while back. She's like, but what I did was, I did it in this weight of a yarn with this size of a needle, and I actually had a beading at the beginning and end of it. I was like, oh, yes. You know, like, yeah. But everybody puts their own little stamp on it.
No,
I was just gonna say, so even if we were theoretically working on the same pattern at the same time, we would both have different flourishes about it.
Right. See, that's, it's just such a, you know, it reminds me of those stories of, like, you know, when six people see a crime scene or something, or see a car accident, you get six entirely different stories, even though it's the same event. This is a much more creative version of that, you know what I mean? You give people the same assignment, and you're going to get six sort of interesting interpretations of that creative endeavor.
Then you're going to have, like, a whole bunch of really upset people with, like, OCD and probably low social skills getting really, really traumatized with themselves that they haven't been able to match the yarn color as it was lit 20
right.
years ago. On
and then...
played it for you.
The have you ever had anybody ask you to make, like, hey, what would we're going to go down the rabbit hole Doctor Who here for a second. Has anybody ever asked you to make, like, a third Doctor scarf? Like, what if the third Doctor wore a scarf? What would that be like? Has anybody ever asked you to come up with something that kind of sort of a taking cosplay a bit and turning it on its ear?
Well, actually, now that you mention it, gosh, I really need to I need to go back on the Witty Knitter messaging setup. But a while back, somebody wanted me to make, she was going to do a Harley Quinn meets the fourth Doctor, like, mashup cosplay. Mm-hmm. And she wanted, I want to say, maybe the season 12 or the season 13 scarf done in black and red.
Right.
Like to coordinate with her Harley Quinn aesthetic.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know how it turned out, because I think we kind of lost touch about it. I'm gonna have to look that up, actually.
Because the world of cosplay is just a whole other realm here, you know what I mean? And especially now we're seeing... And I gotta tell you, I hate the people who are like... And I don't mind saying this on the record, because it pisses me off. I hate the people who are like, girls can't dress like the Doctor. I hate that so much, because at Galley we see so many interesting female interpretations, like taking the fifth Doctor outfit and turning it into a dress. And it's fascinating. And it's beautiful, and it's creative, and it's like, I can't understand the objections to this stuff.
Well, and you know what? And the flip side of that is, you know how, I mean, well, like, look at Miranda and Sam. There's no gender bending about it. Like, she's in Sylvester McCoy's outfit.
Yeah.
There's no...
And she looks great.
What's her name? Valerie Anderson. She does a very, like, she gender bends like that as the first Doctor, and she looks like William fucking Hartnell. Like,
yeah.
Girl.
There were...
Some people gender bend, I guess, harder than others. But, yeah, I'm kind of with you. You know, it is everybody's personal, like, aesthetic, and you get to be as creative or as, you know, slavishly screen accurate as you want. It's not...
Exactly.
You know, if you're just walking around the hallway, it's not the masquerade, and, bitch, you are not the judge.
So, okay, cool. Sammy, this has just been a fascinating look at a topic that I know nothing about. But at the same time, a lot of the stuff you said really resonated as far as the world of just creativity and art, mm-hmm. being artistic and expressing yourself in the world. Care to share any final thoughts that you'd like to share about this, the wonderful world of knitting?
Gosh, I don't know if I have, like, I don't know if I could sum it all up and give you, like, some little nugget of pure truth to put up in your mantelpiece. I think I'm misquoting Virginia Woolf here, but I would say, just like anything else, if you're drawn to be creative in that venue, let yourself be creative in whatever venue works for you. Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Can't agree more.
Does that make sense?
It makes all the sense in the world. In fact, that's the sense that I'm looking for by doing this podcast. That's absolutely right. There's nothing to stop you, especially when you tell your story about the fact that you were laid up. You were literally incapacitated when you picked up this wonderful passion. So quite a lesson in there. So, Sammy, I just want to thank you for taking the time out and being part of the Handsome Timmy D Express.
It was my pleasure, Timmy. Thank you so much for having me. I couldn't have been happier to do it.
I love it, dude. And listen, if you want to buy some wonderful stuff from Sammy and check out his work, just click on any of the links below. I want to thank everybody for listening, tweeting, downloading. We've got some more fun holiday stuff coming up soon. This is Tim Davis on the Handsome Timmy D Express.